Hello, and welcome back to the Happy Hour Show. This is Season 2, Episode 5. For those of you that might just be joining us or watching the show for the first time, my name is Marbette Lewis.
And I'm Rob Lewis.
We've been partners together for about 15, 16 years now, maybe a little bit longer.
Feels longer.
That's great. Working together, married for 15 of them, and we run and operate Spiritus Law, our law firm, which is a boutique law firm focusing entirely, all of our practitioners are full-time dedicated to hospitality practices, either on the real estate side or on the alcohol regulatory and business permitting side, which is really where we come in most of the time.
Exactly.
So we're starting off 2023 with a kick. You know, I think everyone in the industry will say that 2022 was definitely one of the busiest years that we've ever had. Definitely for me in my career. I know that you quite frequently mention the sleepless nights and the amount of work.
But that's it's a great thing for our industry. You know, I think 2022 was a resurgence of work and commitment to the hospitality industry. So sleepless nights are good.
Absolutely. And I think we heard a lot of the same from many of the people that we work with, a lot of our colleagues throughout the country. You know, we're expressing this boom in work and new businesses opening. I think that being down here in South Florida, we've seen just a very unique, you know, influx and rise in the amount of businesses that are opening up, the innovative ideas that are coming out of the industry, all the advertising that's being done, especially with social media. So the industry is definitely booming with a lot of new trends and ideas that we're going to see carry through 2023 into 2024. And so those are kind of some of the issues that we want to talk about today.
No, agreed. I think with today's episode, we want to focus on some industry trends and kind of explain them and kind of talk about them and see what your thoughts are.
Yes. So thank you so much, Rob, for saying what I just said.
Which is always fun
and great. That's what we do here. One of those trends that we love so much is really low alcohol cocktails. And I know that's something that you've really done a lot of work with and are most familiar with.
I think the whole industry trend really is amazing to me in a lot of different ways. I know the concept of being sober curious and kind of focusing on either non-alcoholic beverages like Heineken Zero, you know, or similar products where you're sort of tasting beer, but you're not having any alcohol effects whatsoever, you know, is a phenomenon. It's a recent phenomenon, but it's taking the industry by storm. You know, and I think that, you know, there's kind of a shift, you know, from a health conscious perspective, you know, some of the negative attributes of alcoholic beverages and kind of seeing something new and exciting. But you can't argue with the market share that these low proof, ready to drink cocktails have or these low malt beverages have. You know, they're in high demand and people want them. You know, I'm just puzzled because to me, either have a beer or not have a beer. You know, don't have a product that tastes like a beer, but it's not a beer.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. And now I'm going to say what you just said. You can't ignore the market share that these products have and the popularity and how we're seeing them pop up everywhere. Even though I know, you know, some of the more traditional manufacturers, some of our larger clients on the manufacturing side don't particularly embrace these products. You know, they embrace, you know, the more traditional, you know, alcohol content, more traditional varieties of spirits. So you, there is that conflict within the industry, but I think definitely the newer generations, the younger generations that are becoming, you know, entering the drinking age, 21, 22, they are looking to alternatives. You know, they're looking for more of the experience of consumption rather than the end result of being intoxicated. So I think that's lending, you know, to kind of an open door for a lot of these products to enter the market.
Look, I agree with you, but I also think it's about drinking responsibly. You know, and I think that, you know, to enjoy an adult beverage with its full alcohol content, you know, I think as certain, you know, aspects of that and the socialization that goes with it, you know, either, you know, I think there's a philosophy, either drink or don't drink.
Do you think, you know, and I always love talking about these issues with Rob because of his background as an agent with the Division of Alcohol, Beverage, and Tobacco before he entered the legal field. So there's always that unique perspective, you know, that I definitely benefit from, and I know our clients benefit from when they're speaking to you. But do you think that the division, or even the TTB on the federal level will be creating new classifications for these products down the road so that either they're easier to permit or maybe the labeling requirements are changed or more relaxed because some of these products are very low, you know, on the alcohol content level?
You know, I think it's a slippery slope. You know, I think that there is alcohol in it. The alcohol content may be lower, but, you know, these beverages, some of them have more than 0.5% alcohol by volume. You know, they may be as low as, you know, 2%, 3%, 4%, you know, but there's still an alcohol content in there. And I think the mandatory language on the labels, you know, and the government warnings that are there, you know, I think still need to be there, you know, for a variety of reasons. So I think, you know, kind of exceptions for low proof beverages, you know, probably cuts against the grain of, you know, the government's responsibility to put people on notice, you know, of some of the risks associated with consuming an alcoholic beverage. But I do understand, you know, kind of where you're going with that. You know, I think there are benefits, you know, to low alcohol, you know, proof beverages. I mean, certainly if you're looking at drinking and driving, you know, you're able to consume more of these beverages and not approach the legal limit, you know, but again, you know, as an industry trend, it kind of is an interesting development when you're looking at the growth of market share with these types of beverage products.
Absolutely. And if you're out there and you're developing one of these products, or you're already a very large producer and you're thinking of incorporating these products into your portfolio, there are a variety of issues to consider. It's not just the labeling requirements that you're going to come across that you're probably very familiar with, but it's also how these products are marketed and how they're portrayed on social media. I know even going to grocery stores, or even some other, you know, places, there's confusion sometimes amongst consumers as to whether or not something actually contains alcohol because the alcohol content is so low that, you know, consumers are often mistaken, you know, and they think, oh, this is not really an alcohol product. I can consume it just fine and not worry about drinking and driving. And that's not the case. You know, alcohol content and how it impacts you and how it affects you when you're driving, it's really individualized by person. It depends a lot on, you know, what you already consumed or had that day. So these products shouldn't be taken as alcohol-free by any chance. But I think sometimes when we see them marketed, how they're placed, you know, in some of them, those that are wine-based or those that are beer-based and can be sold here in Florida in grocery stores, it can be confusing, you know, as to what the actual alcohol content is or whether it's considered an alcohol beverage at all.
No, you're absolutely right. It can be confusing to the public. I remember when hard seltzers first came out, there was this assumption, this perception that you could consume more cans of the hard seltzer and not be affected. But if you look at 5% alcohol by volume and you look at the average domestic beer, it's not much lower. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it caught, you know, and it doesn't taste like beer. You know, it has a distinct flavor. It reminds me of like the Bacardi Breezers of many, many years ago, you know, and those sort of alternative beverages that still have sort of high alcohol content, but they don't taste like they do. So right. It's very easy to chase a few of those down and then try and drive a car or not realize that you could be impaired very quickly.
Exactly.
And that's the hazard with some of these. And, you know, especially if they're low proof beverages, you know, they can be sold, as you said, like in grocery stores and markets, you know, so they're readily available. And I think that, you know, when you're not like walking into a liquor store knowing, hey, I'm buying a real alcoholic beverage product, you know, there's that tendency to think that either they're healthier, you know, or they don't have the same sort of effects. But if you consume enough of anything, you're going to feel its effects. So, you know, certainly, everybody needs to be a little cautious in dealing with this.
Right. And that brings us back to your point about responsible consumption. You know, there is the benefit to low alcohol, you know, products is you there. Of course, you can consume more of them and not reach the same level as if you were taking shots. But there is still an element of overall responsible consumption. And, you know, if you're going to consume alcohol, be sure you're responsible enough to do it. Reaching the age of 21 alone, it shouldn't really be the only factor that's considered in that analysis.
Well, just one last point on this is that it reminds me of the near beer. Like certain states had near beer. You know, many Oklahoma was, I think, the last holdout that had near beer, and it was basically a low alcohol content beer of different mainstream brands because it allowed like college students, you know, to drink more and still be able to drive. You know, so the whole concept is kind of old. You know, and, you know, but no one really uses near beer now. And that terminology is kind of phased out. They've kind of like repackaged it as low alcohol content in ready to drink format or hard seltzers. But, you know, again, it's really a low alcohol content beverage that allows you to consume more and not feel the effects.
Yeah, this really is just a repackaged concept. Near beer, I think, got a bad rap for a very long time because it was considered, you know, the strip club drink. And that's just what it was thought of. You know, whenever your near beer was there, that, you know, there were different products that just became kind of synonymous with going to an adult entertainment establishment or going to a strip club because there's the gap, you know, as the age that you're allowed to go into an adult entertainment establishment and the age that you're allowed to consume. And a lot of adult entertainment establishments, you know, allow you to enter when you're 18, but you can't consume alcohol. And so there is a difference, you know, between products that, you know, are sold as near beer, close to beer, and these low alcohol products, which actually do contain alcohol. So, you know, be conscious of that and be conscious of what you're consuming. Another big trend that we're seeing in the industry is kind of this emergence of plant-based alcoholic beverages. And I know what your view is on, you know, the plant-based alcohol products. Do you want to expand on that at all? Let's start with your view on it.
Look, you know, to me, I don't necessarily know the benefits of a plant-based alcoholic beverage. I think it depends on, you know, if you're really truly health conscious and you want to, you know, tear into what the ingredients are and how it's made. You know, that's one thing, but I don't necessarily know if you're mixing those ingredients with an alcoholic beverage, whether or not you truly have the health benefits that you're looking for. You know, it's almost like Coke versus Diet Coke. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still drinking a product that may not be the best thing for you, but it certainly tastes good. And, you know, if you feel all warm and fuzzy inside because you're drinking a plant-based beverage, fantastic. But whether or not you're really gaining the health benefits that you are, you know, that's a whole nother different issue.
As you know, it's like eating organic lard. You know, it may be organic, but it is still lard. So, you know, with these kinds of products, people still need to be conscious of the fact that you are still, you know, ingesting and consuming alcohol. However, that being said, I can tell you from personal experience, and a good friend of mine, a fellow Women of the Vine and Spirits member, we met at a Women of the Vine and Spirits conference. Those of you out there, whether, you know, you're a man, woman, undecided, whatever your gender identity is, Women of the Vine and Spirits is definitely an organization that's near and dear to my heart, and a close friend of mine that runs and owns Vegan Wines introduced me to the vegan wine concept and to tasting different wines. And that really all stemmed from my telling her that I was having to steer away from wine, which was shocking because I would get just these terrible headaches every time that I would drink red wine. And then it started happening with white wine as well. And I, of course, had to experiment with all different kinds and all different brands. And I noticed it. You remember, right?
I do.
And I don't actually. No, but, and all of that really stemmed from, you know, these headaches that I was getting and just not feeling well, not being able to enjoy this product that I had enjoyed for so many years. And in telling her about that, she recommended that I try vegan wines because of what goes into the soil, what goes into the product, and what you're ultimately ingesting. And she thought that maybe some of my headaches might be related to the fact that I, you know, in my older age, and we won't discuss how old that is, but in my older age, I've developed a lot of allergies to different things that I didn't have before. And one of those things is like shellfish and a lot of different animal products that I've had to learn to stay away from. And she was explaining to me how sometimes these animal products will make it into the soil. Even shellfish can make it into the soil in different wines and just in the production of it. So she introduced me to a few that I continue to purchase. And actually, it does make a difference. And I did notice a difference in, you know, the taste is different sometimes, but it can be just as good. And I really didn't have a lot of the after effects that I had been experienced when I was just consuming, you know, regular, the more traditional wine products and the more popular wine products that we're used to seeing. So at least from my personal experience, you know, I don't know if it's because my mind and body really wanted to embrace the vegan wine and go back to drinking wine. But for me, at least, I did notice a difference, and I did notice a difference in the product. So I do understand why people might be shifting to vegan type alcohol products. It's not necessarily to eliminate the alcohol, you know, and the negative effects that that might have, even though many of us probably should or might consider that. But it really is more so to be able to enjoy a product within the lifestyle choices that they've decided to make. So, you know, if you are vegan, I think it's wonderful that now all of these products are entering the market and that there are different options for you, whether because you choose to be a vegan just for health benefits or for moral reasons, or even like I have for a lot of allergy issues and medical reasons. So I think these new products coming onto the market are great. Now, we do have the same issues though with labeling and making health claims on a label, and especially in advertising.
Well, I mean, I think that's a genuine concern. And also, I do agree with you that there should be all different types of products for all different types of demand. You know, and if, you know, there are individuals out there that have certain sensitivities or certain preferences, I think it's up to the industry to provide choices for those individuals as well. So I do want to say that. I think what can happen with these types of product is sort of health benefits and labeling, you know, and certain statements, you know, that, you know, a certain type of product is healthier than another or healthy in general. And I think the TTB really cracks down on certificates of label approval and their applications where, you know, you go too far, you know, and I think that it's very important that, you know, that, you know, all sort of health claims or anything like that is properly vetted and within TTB guidelines, you know, for labels. Cause I think it's very important that people don't believe that one product is healthier to drink than another product when they both contain alcohol.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what happens is there is a vetting process with respect to labels and what gets put on a labels, but you know, don't you agree? There's really not that much vetting beyond that point, especially in terms of marketing and what gets put out on the market.
Right. I mean, I think there's one thing with the oversight with respect to labels. I think it's another thing with respect to enforcement and what may be portrayed in advertising or social media advertising. And I think the, you know, sometimes marketing gets very enthusiastic to try and find something edgy or different about their product, and they kind of focus on that, and they may cross a regulatory line, you know, and sometimes there's lack of enforcement, and, you know, sometimes it becomes acceptable, you know, from a business perspective, but not from a legal or regulatory one. And, you know, and part of our job is to sometimes bring that back into compliance and say, look, we get it from a marketing perspective, we understand, but from a legal perspective, you're kind of outside the gray into the black, and we need to bring you into the white. So, you know, I completely get it.
Absolutely. And, you know, part of that that makes our job very difficult is when a client or, you know, a new business owner that's starting out comes to us with a concept and we say, well, that's not permissible or that's not allowed, or you can't put that in your advertising, or you can't put that in your label. And their response, it will always something will always typically be something like, well, but I've seen this a million times, you know, or I see this online all the time. And just because you see something online or even something that may have made it out into the market doesn't necessarily mean it's legal. So if you're thinking of putting out one of these products, you know, a vegan wine product, any product that claims to have any health benefits, or low alcohol content products, definitely something you want to pay attention to is what the regulations actually are, as opposed to what you might think they are based on what you're looking at, you know, on social media or what you're just seeing in the marketplace. One of the other areas that we wanted to talk about today, and I see that we're getting short on time, but it's really something that we get a lot of calls on. And we just went through kind of a whole season of having to really deal with this issue again and again and repeat the same obstacles that this business concept and business idea has. And that's really mobile bars. Mobile bars have become kind of a very trendy way of starting up, you know, a bar or a lounge without really having a lease or having, you know, an established premises that you're going to use for the rest of your business venture. And I think we see that popping up at a lot of places throughout the country. However, here in Florida, we've been a little bit slow to pick up on the trend.
No, exactly. I mean, one of the things that, you know, that I think that the trend is really transactional costs. You know, as you mentioned, you know, if you want to just find an area, it's got a lot of walk-up traffic, you pop open a bar and you don't have to buy a lease, you don't even buy a liquor license, you don't buy anything, you know, I can see how it's easy to get up in business and test your product. But the problem is a lot of regulatory hurdles that you're skipping over. You know, Florida doesn't have a mobile bar license. It doesn't exist, you know, for a variety of reasons, but we do have a caterer's license. So we do have a special license that if you're a food caterer and you also want to cater alcohol as well, there's a license for that. So if you were engaged to have a catered event somewhere, whether it's in the public domain or if it's someone's house, you can provide prepared food and you can provide alcohol. You know, and there's parameters of where the caterer can buy the alcohol from and, you know, what happens to the alcohol that's not consumed and left over. And there's a plethora of regulations. They also have to have 51% food sales versus alcohol sales, but there is no sort of mobile bar license. But just like we were talking about with lack of enforcement, you know, there are these caterers that have kind of said, well, there's maybe more money in just catering alcohol as opposed to catering food. So a lot of these pop-up bars say, well, no, it's okay, I'm a caterer, but there's no catered event, there's no food, they certainly don't meet the percentages, and they're out there utilizing a caterer's license like it's a mobile bar license, which we don't have.
Right, and we see that a lot in particular with food trucks.
Absolutely, food trucks, they came out, and food trucks have come out years ago. You know, they're still very trendy. There's cult followings that follow these trucks everywhere. I myself love food trucks, mm-hmm. There's certain foods. I love it, I'll follow it, I'll go there. But where they get problematic is that they want to offer alcohol too. You know, and unfortunately, you know, one of the key elements of liquor licensing or alcohol licensing in Florida is like, well, is your business mobile, you know, or is it stationary? You know, and then we've had cases like this where, you know, ceviche trucks, you know, and they want to get into it. And, you know, we've had to actually disable them, you know, remove the wheels where they're renting a space and then you kind of license the truck. And if it's not mobile, it may be eligible for a license in and of itself. You know, there's a lot of local permitting that goes involved, which is hand in hand with alcohol licensing in Florida. They kind of go together, but you know, it's possible. But when you have sort of the mobile bars and how many times people call this up and say, hey, listen, I have a great idea. We're going to have a party bus and we want to license the bus and you kind of stop here and you provide the alcohol. I mean, there's case law and all sorts of things with the mobile buses, but there's no license for that here. There really isn't. So unless you're hopping into a full catered event with food on a mobile bus, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work. But one of the things that is inspiring is that, again, you know, it's the entrepreneurship of our industry wanting to meet a demand, the customer demand, and trying to push the envelope, as we say. You know, so I certainly admire that. But again, we also have to look at it from a regulatory and legal perspective and say, how can we make this work if we can?
Absolutely. And there are major, you know, players and business owners and businesses that have expanded following this exact concept. You know, there are chains of food trucks and there are chains of these party buses and these tour type buses that have become very popular in other areas. So if that is your business model and it is something that you want to bring to Florida, if there's no creative way to work within the current regulatory scheme, something that is good about Florida is, you know, we typically are quick to create new license types or special license types for business models that make sense. You know, it's been done in the past and it can always be done if that is something that, you know, anyone out there is looking to bring to South Florida. Part of our job is to stay away from saying no. And so we always try to come up with creative solutions to work within the regulatory framework because, you know, typically if it's a new venture, especially you're coming into a new area, you don't want to take on the costs of, you know, trying to draft new legislation or create new license types. Although there are, you know, expert lobbyists that handle those areas. You know, we work with one in our own firm with, you know, Halsey Bashirs, who joined us last year. And, you know, that is a long and tedious process. Sometimes it is the only option, but definitely it's not usually where we start. It's typically where we end up. We do try to work within the current regulatory framework, sometimes getting very, very creative, where it's almost, you know, too creative to really move forward with. Sometimes we're just on the cusp of what can be accepted and what isn't with like floating hotels. When, you know, there have been special Super Bowl events here or something that rises to that level, something unique, you know, that someone wants to do, but we don't really have the regulatory framework to accomplish it. So fortunately, our division, as many divisions throughout the country, you know, they do listen to ideas and, you know, there's always the potential for bringing a new concept before the division to be able to accomplish a business perspective. Are there any other trends that you kind of see coming up that might be relevant, you know, as we move through 2023? I know one that we frequently talk about that kind of dies off and then it kind of comes back is really like the multi-use concepts. And right now they're focused on sporting events and the, you know, the mix golf facility, restaurant, nightclub, lounge kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, has been a big one down here in South Florida.
I think it's definitely. I mean, I think if you can take a concept, whether it's throwing axes, throwing knives, throwing whatever, and add an alcohol component, people are looking at it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have it's kind of going way beyond sports bars, you know, and I think that's kind of, I think the rebirth from the pandemic as well, you know, people are looking at different ways to get out and socialize with one another. So they're trying to marry, you know, different, you know, sort of activities with alcohol. So you're looking at, you know, putting greens and alcohol. You're looking at driving ranges and alcohol. Pretty soon we'll probably have shooting ranges and alcohol. You know, any sort of leisure activity that people enjoy doing, creating sort of a food and alcohol concept to go with it. You know, so we're seeing a lot of flexibility throughout the country and sort of trying to meet that demand, you know, in our industry as a whole.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good place kind of for us to stop our segment for today. And that's going to bring us into our episode 6 that will be coming up soon, which will probably be trying to discuss a little bit of AI and issues around artificial intelligence, because that's also an issue that's been coming up a lot with our clients, how to use it, how to implement it, and regulatory hurdles. So see you next time. Thanks.
Thank you.